Advocacy among dermatologists has never been more needed to ensure the safety of patients who entrust us with their care and to ensure the present and future viability of our specialty. As healthcare reform proceeds in the United States, it is important for us as physicians who maintain a trusted expertise to be involved in the process in order to effect meaningful changes that maintain the sanctity of the doctor-patient relationship and improve outcomes for patients who suffer from the important diseases we treat. Besides the federal changes affecting all physicians, it is important that dermatologists maintain a strong voice in the legislation in their own individual states, as many regulations and laws can adversely affect the care of our patients. In this dialogue, Dr. Stephen Stone and Dr. Bruce A. Brode discuss state advocacy issues, including tanning bed legislation and truth in advertising regarding healthcare workers' credentials.
This is Steve Stone, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Bruce Brode, who is a clinical professor of dermatology at the University of Pennsylvania and practices in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, but of most importance on today's topic is the fact that he's the State Policy Committee Chair at the Academy. And, of course, there's been a lot going on in the last year. So we're here today to talk about a little bit about state advocacy, what's currently on the agenda, and why, as a dermatologist, it's important for you to be involved, because we don't use lobbyists necessarily to do all of our work for us. It's up to us in the field to be very vocal about these issues. I hope that's a fair summation.
So state advocacy, I think, is really where things happen. So there's issues that are affecting dermatologists every day at a state level. And if we're not involved, we're not going to be part of the process. What are some of the issues that are going on around us? Indoor tanning is one of our big issues. It's a big priority of the Academy. And we've seen a lot of positive momentum in this area. But there's other concerns as well. So we're seeing legislation out there that has the potential to threaten our ability to practice safely in our offices and do what we do very safely every day, office-based surgery regulation, both at the regulatory level and at the legislative level are going on as well.
There are scope of practice issues as well, right? What can the non-physician clinicians legally do when working for a dermatologist or working for a non-dermatologist, but perhaps doing dermatology?
In many states, and I'm from Pennsylvania, and there's a bill now that would allow nurse practitioners to practice independently now. So we're seeing an erosion, and there's a lot of support for this because of all of the patients that will be coming into the healthcare system. There's a lot of support for non-physicians to be able to practice independently. So nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and what we try to do is focus more on the team-based approach to care. And so it's very important for us to be part of the process. Dermatologists use a lot of physician extenders in their practices, so we have a lot of knowledge about this. And sort of a response to the scope of practice issue, because in many respects, the horse is out of the barn, the toothpaste is out of the tube on that issue, we're at least trying to promote transparency so that people know who it is that's providing their care. So there are a number of bills out there at the state level that indicate who's giving care. There's ID badge bills. Pennsylvania, I'm proud to say, had the first ID badge bill passed in the country. There's also a number of truth in advertising bills so that when somebody reads an ad, they aren't deceived by who the provider of care is.
Yeah, there is quite an issue of non-physicians representing themselves as dermatologists when they're actually physician's assistants or nurse practitioners who are limiting their practice to dermatology, but they're not truly dermatologists.
That's one of the biggest complaints that we get from our members. So at the State Dermatology Society level, members have the chance to email, to communicate and say, what are you doing about this? One of the biggest complaints is, what are you doing about the fact that in my town, there's a nurse practitioner who's being supervised, for example, by a dentist offering cosmetic procedures with a big billboard saying that they have a skin care center, a laser center. And so dermatologists are looking to organize medicine to try to respond to this.
And I think you've just answered the question, the implied question, why should I be involved? There's nobody else who's going to do it if we as physicians don't get active ourselves.
As the old saying goes, if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu. So, and this is an age-old process. So Pericles quoted somewhere back in 430 BC, just because you don't take an interest in politics doesn't mean politics won't take an interest in you. So it's not really something that should be a hard choice for most dermatologists. And I think our immunity from what's going on in the political arena is fading rapidly. And I think it's important for all of us to be involved.
And how does a dermatologist start to get involved if he or she is listening today or is out practicing at home, has fairly limited time with their practice, but feels, yeah, this is an important issue, I can understand why it's important, what can I do? What do you tell that doctor?
So I think the best place is to direct them to their state dermatology society, and hopefully they have a state dermatology society. That's been an initiative of the academy, and that's why that's been an initiative, because oftentimes the state dermatology society has a political wing. They have a political committee. It gives them an entryway. But there are other options as well. They can contact their state medical society. They can become involved in their state medical society. A lot of the issues that pertain to us are common to all areas of medicine. And then there's opportunities for them to get involved at the academy level as well, to learn about advocacy, to learn how they can communicate to their legislators.
If your state doesn't have a state dermatological society, or perhaps a local society with an interest in the political, you could volunteer with your AMA committee or your county medical society and get involved from that point of view.
That's an excellent way, and we've seen that, and we've seen some, I wouldn't say successes, but near successes. So one example is in the state of Idaho, a medical student actually took on the initiative of indoor tanning, somebody who was interested in dermatology. There really isn't a highly organized derm society in Idaho focusing on advocacy, but by working with the dermatologists in the community and with the medical society, they were able to at least get a bill up and running. It hasn't been passed in that state. So there are ways for the dermatologists to do it, even if they don't have a well-developed state society that's focused on advocacy.
You mentioned the issue of tanning being an important one for local advocacy. I can say, being in Illinois myself, that in our state, I testified for a state bill which did not pass for the first couple of years, and supporters wound up getting it passed by the city council in Chicago, and then we got it passed by the city council in Springfield, Illinois, and finally when both of those cities passed it, and I believe Champaign-Urbana, which is where the University of Illinois is, at the state level it did pass after those cities had taken the steps.
That's correct.
But yes. Why don't we talk about indoor tanning? Because you're familiar with what's going on in a lot of states. So what's been happening on that issue?
So this has been an incredibly exciting year in the arena of indoor tanning. First of all, at the federal level, the FDA has come out with a proposal to reclassify tanning beds to a higher level. And actually, that's had a trickle-down effect, I think, in large degree. So I think because of that, because of the work of dermatologists, because of the data we've had, we've seen four states. We've been working on this since 1980 in certain states. So to see four states ban tanning in 1 year is just tremendous. And then we've seen some other states, New Jersey this year, had a bill passed that's a ban under the age of 17. We've seen a few more parental consent bills passed in Washington, D.C., in West Virginia. And then, as you mentioned, the city bills in Chicago and Springfield, Illinois, and Philadelphia, which is close to where I'm from. And I think they took a cue from what's happened in Illinois, passed a city ordinance to address indoor tanning.
The other side is obviously the tanning industry, and at the local level and state level, the businesses in those states and towns. What is the most overriding issue that they present in arguing against these bills?
Well, they're sort of like a monster that just morphs into different forms every year. So they use whatever argument that we have encountered effectively yet. But their big argument this year is, as you mentioned, the infringement on parental rights. So they're trying to sway legislatures by saying that this is an infringement, a violation of parental rights. And they use other arguments as well. They accuse us as dermatologists of talking out of both sides of our mouth because they say, well, you folks actually prescribe phototherapy for your patients, and you're just trying to monopolize those patients all for your own benefit. And they point to the fact that tanning beds can have some therapeutic benefit. Of course, their argument is flawed because it's really the wavelength of light is different. There's not the same sort of oversight that we provide to our patients. There's not the counseling of the risks, and there's not the screening process done for high-risk patients.
Yeah, even the issue of vitamin D, which I hear all the time, is the tanning booths get the less UVB they're producing, the more UVA, and the UVA is not the one that gives rise to the vitamin D. It's the UVB that promotes vitamin D.
And they still use that argument, and there are so many flaws to that argument. I almost enjoy when they bring that up in committee because I think we have a good counter to that. Just what you said, the tanning beds aren't as effective, and there are so many factors that go into the production of vitamin D from UV light. It depends on the skin type. It depends on what areas of the body are exposed, and there's a limit to how much vitamin D can be produced by UV light in the skin. But the bottom line is there's an alternative, a very reasonable alternative, and that's taking vitamin D3. It's one of the most inexpensive supplements that can be purchased over the counter. You can buy a year's supply of vitamin D for about $20. You know what you're getting when you go in the sunlight if you're depending on that. You don't know how much you're getting. I use the argument to the legislators when this comes up. I say, representative or senator, if someone told you today that cigarette smoking was a great source of vitamin D3 and you didn't smoke, would you start?
That's a very good example. Let me back up just a tiny bit, and let's use tanning as a prototype issue. A person wants to get involved in his community, in his state, his or her state. No statewide society, or perhaps there is one. I guess the easiest way is to go to the society and try and engender support. But having done that and getting the society involved, what can you as an individual do in terms of dealing with the governmental authority that you want to influence?
Well, I think as physicians, we're in a very powerful position because despite the erosion of public opinion of the medical profession over the years, their opinions are still held in high regard. So we have a voice. We have actually a trusted voice with our legislators. We know the issue better than anybody else. We know the effect on public health policy. So they'll listen to us. Oftentimes, I mean, in my practice, I have several state senators as patients, several state reps as patients, lots of staffers. And so that's actually a very easy way to start a conversation going. They're right there before us, and they'll listen.
And if you're not comfortable lobbying them at your office while they're patients, you can always say, you know, there's some stuff I'd like to talk to you about on your side of the in your business, and can we meet? And it's amazing. They'll listen, and if you tell them to bring their health aide in, now it's easy for me year-round because Springfield, Illinois is a state capital, but you, for the most part, we don't have 12-month-a-year state legislatures, and you can almost always meet with your legislator.
That's very true. The legislators go back to their districts. They're usually very happy to meet. They like to meet their constituents. They want to be heard. The legislators want votes. So those meetings are usually very easy to arrange. And that's one of the nice things about getting involved at a state level is there's much more access directly to your state senators and your state representatives, and you really can meet with them.
Yeah, and let's not forget about even writing letters to the editor, because if you get an article, just a small letter to the editor talking about tanning in the newspaper, you may find that 3 days later there's letters attacking your position from the tanning spa owners. But on the other hand, people will pay attention to a letter signed by an MD.
And it's funny that you mention that, because one of the strategies we used last year to try to advance our bill, and we did this at the end of the summer when people were still on summer break and legislators were away but ready to come back, is we recruited dermatologists from all over the state to write op-ed letters to every major newspaper in Pennsylvania. And so they sort of hit the press at the same time. And that's a very powerful tool because it gets communication out to the public, but it also sort of exerts some pressure on the legislators, because in those op-eds we're talking about our pending tanning bill. It puts pressure on the legislators to address that and to move on it.
So one thing is to join and be involved with your state society that's involved in pushing for legislation. The second is to make those contacts yourself with the legislators and when possible, their health aides and health advisors. And the third, of course, being the going public with letters to the editor. Is there anything else that we as individuals should be doing on an issue? And obviously, the big issue right now is tanning, but there will be others.
I think learning about the material, so becoming an expert in the topic you're talking about. The last thing you want to do is tell untruths to a legislator. So you need to understand it fully. But then I think the difficult part is you need to gain some understanding of how to message that. We have to leave sort of our world of doctor speak, which we've become very good at over the years, and enter the world of normal people speak and communicate our messages very simply. Get the medical jargon out of there and practice delivering a very simple message. And that's easier said than done, actually.
Well, it is easier said than done, but it's also true that most of us in the office dealing face-to-face with a patient are able to get over the doctor speak. It's when you put us in front of a computer and start writing letters or in front of a legislator that we start using the doctor speak again. And I've seen it happen time and time again.
In front of cameras, and you're right, because we're natural advocates. We advocate every day. Every time a patient comes into a room to see us, we're advocates. We're advocates for their health, and we're teaching them and we're communicating messages to them. So we just need to remember that we're maybe better than we think we are.
And think before you speak. So we know we should be identifying the issue, focusing on the issue, making the appropriate contacts. Are there resources that we can depend upon or call upon in this particular case to help us deal with the issues that we're trying to advocate for?
So the Academy fortunately recognized years ago the importance of these issues at the state level, and they've developed some very effective toolkits to be used for state advocacy. And those toolkits are available online to our members. They can go online, they click on the advocacy button, they click on state advocacy, and they're linked in right away. And those toolkits contain some powerful items. They contain the latest research, they contain talking points. So interviews with media can be done quite easily. Model bills are there so that, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel again. If you want to start a tanning bill in your state, at least you have a template to start from. And this goes with all of our advocacy priorities. That includes truth in advertising, medical spa regulation, office-based regulation. So I would highly recommend that people visit the website and use those resources. The other very powerful resource is, as you move along and you have a bill going in the legislature, the Academy has tremendous amount of support for grassroots efforts. So they can send action alerts calling upon all the dermatologists in the state to get on board and to contact their legislator about a specific area. And that includes talking points and links right into their email.
Yeah, I think another big thing in the entire political process is coalition building. When you're talking about tanning, the American Cancer Society or the local chapter of the Cancer Society is a natural ally. There are some issues where they would not perhaps be your number one ally, but there's usually some organization, not dermatologic, that also belongs with you on the issue, and you can get them to come along.
Very much so. So there's the American Cancer Society, there's melanoma advocacy groups both nationally, there's AIM. We have some melanoma advocacy groups in our state that are, and they are very powerful for garnering the grassroots support. The American Cancer Society has a huge database. So in terms of grassroots, extremely helpful. And I also strongly recommend that you develop coalitions with your state medical society, because then it takes the issue onto a broader stage. So it's not just our issue in dermatology, but it's an issue for the full house of medicine. And the medical societies, the state medical societies, oftentimes know the lay of the land with the legislator, and they can steer you in the right direction.
Well, I think we've gotten a good grounding here. Is there anything you'd like to say in summary of what we've talked about?
Well, I think as dermatologists, I think we're passionate about a lot of these issues, and we know and we care about our patients. And I think we're used to dealing with patients and helping patients on a case-by-case basis. But getting involved in advocacy actually gives you a chance to really impact the health of your patients on a much broader scale. And I think getting involved at the state level, although it may be intimidating, really is there are a lot of resources there. The legislators are very accessible. And I would encourage every dermatologist to take the first step tomorrow, if not today.
Yeah, and it can be a lot of fun.
It's energizing. You
know,
it's energizing, actually. It gives you an energy because you realize that you're part of the process now. And if you're not a part of the process, you're a part of the problem.
Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth, and I was going to say that, and then I was going to say thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve.
Dermatologists and the American Academy of Dermatology have been at the forefront of efforts toward regulation of indoor tanning. Indoor tanning has repeatedly been shown to be an important risk factor in the development of melanoma and non-melanoma skin cancers. Studies have estimated the increases in risk for melanoma, basal cell carcinoma, and squamous cell carcinoma to be 59%, 40%, and 102%, respectively. Effecting change has not been easy or expedient, as demonstrated in Illinois, where legislation first passed at the city level before passing in the state. Additionally, the tanning industry has contested these efforts with arguments that are scientifically unfounded and not supported by data about UVA tanning beds causing beneficial increases in vitamin D levels. The industry has also argued that bans on indoor tanning for minors undermine parental decision-making. Despite these challenges, the Academy has formed strategic alliances with the American Cancer Society and AIM at Melanoma to help advance this cause. The result of this advocacy effort has been that 43 states and the District of Columbia now restrict access to indoor tanning by banning or requiring parental consent for minors, and the FDA has increased regulations on indoor tanning device manufacturers and requires tanning beds to bear clear labels conveying their risks. Studies now show that indoor tanning among minors has decreased significantly in states that have passed these restrictions. In its August 2014 issue, Dermatology World took an in-depth look at the strategies dermatology has used to restrict indoor tanning for minors and change attitudes about tanning. One can visit www.aad.org/DW to read the article. A recent challenge of considerable weight threatening the care of dermatology patients is the rising trend of non-physicians independently practicing dermatology. Recent laws, including the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, reduced the barriers of providing dermatologic care to nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and naturopathic doctors, or so-called allied health professionals, who lack the education, experience, and licensing standards of board-certified dermatologists. Specifically, Section 2706A of the law is a non-discrimination in healthcare provision, which outlaws insurance companies from distinguishing between the qualifications of physicians and non-physician providers. While initially intended to enhance the availability of primary care in underserved areas and to help accommodate millions of newly insured patients, these new regulations have had an unintended consequence for specialty care. With its perceptions of a relatively healthy patient population, low disease acuity, and relatively profitable cosmetic aspects of practice, dermatology could be particularly susceptible to an influx of non-physician practitioners who seek to practice independently. Certain dermatology departments currently offer a form of one-year dermatology fellowship for nurse practitioners or physician assistants, and there is also a dermatology board examination for nurse practitioners, sanctioned by the Dermatology Nurses Association, which allows passing applicants to be termed board-certified in dermatology. Many in the dermatology community have expressed concern that the usage of the term board certification for mid-level providers could be the cause of confusion for patients and others who are not physicians and may not be aware that such certification is in no way equivalent to a dermatology residency. Dermatology residency alone, not inclusive of medical school or internship requirements, involves an average of 10,000 hours of specialized clinical training compared to the 500 to 900 hours of general clinical training that a doctorate of nursing requires. The way that billing laws are currently structured, non-physician practitioners who practice dermatology could bill independently and are reimbursed at 85% of the Medicare contracted rate. This unfortunately places a modest premium on the important and extensive clinical training and strict licensing requirements engendered in becoming a medical doctor and board-certified dermatologist. Surveys sponsored by the American Medical Association have demonstrated that patients in the majority of cases are unclear of the qualifications, educational level, or licensing of caregivers. In an effort to increase transparency and ensure that patients understand the level of care they are receiving, the American Medical Association started a Truth in Advertising campaign advocating for legislation that would require providers to display their license type on ID badges within their offices and in all advertising. Despite opposition from societies representing non-physician health professionals, the AMA has proceeded with this effort and has included a legislative toolkit including templates of legislation to be presented at the state level. While the issues at hand are of particular importance to the current and future practice of our specialty, it is often unclear how dermatologists can become engaged in the political process and what impact they can have. The most direct method of involvement is through participation in one's state dermatology society. While most do not have the funding for professional lobbying services, they often have members who are particularly interested in the political aspects of specialty administration and have already established connections with state lawmakers. In the absence of a state dermatology society, the state medical society can serve as an excellent alternative and provides the additional benefit of framing the issue as one of importance not only to dermatology but to the entire House of Medicine. Additional avenues of involvement could include direct communication with legislators, and members are encouraged to schedule time to speak with them. Experience from dermatologists who advocate for the specialty shows that legislators, especially at the state level, are very concerned with the views of their constituents and will make the time to meet with a physician serving as an envoy for a state or national medical society. Another measure that can be employed is addressing the public directly by way of letters to newspapers or other media outlets. This is often in the form of op-ed pieces that work to keep the general public informed of our specialty's efforts and can encourage lawmakers to advance bills that protect the public. Fortunately, the Academy has developed a toolkit available on its website, which provides its members with important talking points and the latest research. An important future role for practicing dermatologists lies in advocacy to enhance patient safety, ensure quality of care, and maintain the viability of our important medical specialty. Recent advances in legislation to regulate indoor tanning serve as a model for our effectiveness in achieving meaningful change for the benefit of our patients. The collective experience gained in advocating for this imperative public health measure must be applied to establishing reasonable limits to the dermatologic care provided independently by non-physicians who lack the necessary training, experience, and licensing to carry out this work. Each of us, whether through involvement in state medical or dermatology societies, direct contact with lawmakers, or through direct communication to the public through media, must play an active role to protect our patients and the future of our profession.